The Time Traveler's Guide to Not Getting Caught. Chapter 18. That time I went back to the 1940s to court lonely wives. I gotta say, by this time in my travels, I had pretty much run out of ideas for what to do with my time traveling device. I mean, I could go back in time and have sex with someone famous, or I could go back in time and have sex with someone who wasn't famous, but is that what I really wanted to do? Yes. Yes, it was what I really wanted to do. But now the question was, what time period had the hottest women? Or maybe I had to look at things differently. Maybe, instead of thinking of it like that, I should be going back to a time that would be the easiest for me to get laid. During World War II, a bunch of American men were overseas, which meant I could go back to the 1940s and sleep with a bunch of soldier wives. But would that be kind of cruel? Like, they're all fighting in a world war, and I'm going back in time and sleeping with their wives. But then I thought, is it really that cruel? If anything, these women are lonely and horny, and I could be offering a service by servicing these servicemen's wives. And I gotta be honest, once I thought about 1940s America, I really couldn't get myself to think of any other time period. I mean, the ratio of women to men would be so high, I would be foolish not to go back to that time. But I was gonna go about things differently than I had all other times. I was going to research hard, like I was studying for an exam or something. And I was gonna make sure I was super rich in the 1940s. And then I was gonna stay there for a long time and really develop my reputation so that I could get laid multiple times. Yeah, that's what I'll do. Or I could just wing it like I always do and go back and try to sleep with the first woman I fall in love with. Either way sounded good to me, but the research way seemed like it was gonna be a lot more of a hassle. Now, before I continue, I want to prepare you for the ending of the book. No, this isn't the last chapter, but it is the chapter before the last chapter, or penultimate if you're some sort of douchey person who uses that term. And I just want you to be able to fully appreciate everything now before we get to the tumultuous ending that takes place on the Titanic when things get really crazy. So this chapter might not seem as consequential as the finale, but just know that it's gonna be fun and relaxing, and just think of it as the quiet before the storm that is the Titanic. Just to give you a little foreshadowing of this chapter, I fall in love, and I have some of the craziest sex of my life. And this is coming from a guy who impregnated a cave woman. Did you forget I did that? I hope not, because it's still something I'm very proud of. I mean, ashamed about, since I abandoned my child and everything. Anyway, I was back home in my time, and I knew I wanted an empanada, so I go to the local grocery store and I ask where the empanada section is. But apparently, they don't have an empanada section. So I leave and I go to a local South American restaurant, and I order an empanada. But when they bring it to me, I realize that I got empanadas confused with tamales. So actually, I wanted a tamale and not an empanada. But I eat the empanada anyway, and I was surprised by how good it was. So I order 4 more and I eat them all, but then I still have a hankering for a tamale, so I order a tamale. But by the time the tamale comes, I wasn't hungry, so I had to take the tamale home. So I get the tamale to go, and I decide I would come home and heat it up when I get hungry again. But when I get home, I have nothing to do, so I decide to rewatch the entire iCarly series, but this time I would watch it as if I were some sort of TV critic to really evaluate the quality of the show. And as a side note, how does one become a TV critic? Aren't they just basically people who stay home all day and watch television and then write about it? Or do you have to get a degree to do that? What am I saying? Of course you don't. All you have to do is convince people that you in some way understand the difference between good and bad TV. Maybe I could become a TV critic after this. Does anyone know how to become one? If so, could you please email me? I wouldn't be doing it for the money, I'd be doing it for the influence so that I could get everyone to agree that what I think is good is actually good, and then I would feel superior to everyone else. I mean, isn't that what we all want anyway? So anyway, I watch through all of iCarly again and I realize that it is in fact as good as I had always thought, and that any sort of epiphany I got in the Age of Enlightenment was in no way legitimate. So now that I got that out of the way, I needed to figure out when and where in the 1940s I would travel. I figured it had to be sometime between 1941 and 1945 because that's when all the soldiers were overseas. So I made some calculations in my head, and then I realized it would be better to go when the soldiers had been away longer because the women would be hornier. So I decided to go to 1944. I had to decide which city I wanted to go to. New York would have the most single women, so that seemed like a good idea, but I wanted to also go somewhere that was a little less of a city and a little more of a suburb, so I decided Los Angeles in 1944 would be a good place to travel. After I got that settled, I decided that because I already put so much thought into this journey, that I should also ensure I would be a rich man in 1944. So I found a collector that had a bunch of 1944 money and I bought everything he had, and now I wouldn't have to worry at all about pretending to be a rich businessman because in a way, I had become a rich businessman. The final piece of the puzzle was the clothes. This time, I decided to get a really nice modern suit, and even if the women in the 1940s were all like, "What sort of clothes are those? I've never seen them before," I could just say it's a suit that I got in Paris and then they'd all swoon. And let me just say to all the readers out there who are like the babysitter and want to comment that at this point of time, Paris was occupied by Nazi Germany, I want you to understand that nobody would be thinking about that if I told them I got my clothes from Paris. Nobody. And if they were, then they certainly weren't going to be the sort of women that I would be interested in anyway. So I go to the fanciest suit store in the city, and I look around and the worker there looks at me like I'm some twerp who can't really afford any of the expensive suits, and he dismisses me and I say, "Well, all right then, I'm gonna go to your competitor store." So I go to the second best suit store in the city and the worker there is so much nicer. So I tell him I wanna buy a bunch of suits. So he shows me all of his best suits and I tell him, "I'll take them all." Then after I buy all the suits, I go back to the other suit store and I show the rude worker all my bags of clothes and I say, "Big mistake." And I think it hurt his feelings, which made me feel a lot better. So I get home and I have a whole bunch of suits and 1944 money. But I realize I need to get an old-timey suitcase because I'm fairly confident that they don't have upright rolly suitcases back in the 1940s. So I find a suitable suitcase on Amazon and I order it. But now I'm realizing that this is more effort than I've ever put into pretty much anything in my life, and that this would all have to be worth it or I was gonna be angry for exerting so much energy. But then I thought, what else am I doing with my life that I can't just put a little bit of effort into it, you know? And then I started to get a little bit down on myself. I wondered if maybe I wasn't the best version of me. That maybe, instead of traveling through time, I should be working on bettering myself or something like that, you know? But then I realized that it would just take so much more effort to better myself than to just go back in time and make myself forget about all of these toxic thoughts. But you know what? Now that I'm saying all of this aloud, I don't really think I'm that bad of a person. Like, I haven't intentionally wanted to hurt anyone other than that turd during the Ultimate Frisbee game and the guy at the suit shop. But I mean, I'm only vindictive against people who are vindictive against me. And you know what? I don't even know why I'm having to justify my actions for some listener who I'm sure would have biffed Tannen just as hard as me or even harder. Like, I didn't steal that much money from the casinos. And while we're on the subject, is it really that bad stealing from casinos? I'm sure if I gave that money to charities, that you wouldn't even think I was that bad of a human. I mean, sure, I abandoned my cave baby, but wouldn't we all have done that? What did you want me to do? Stay in caveman times and raise the kid? I bet you wouldn't have liked it if I brought a doctor back from my time to perform a prehistoric abortion on her. At least I didn't do that, huh? Never thought of all the bad things I could have done that I didn't do. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, I'm glad I finally put that out there because I could feel the judgment coming from your ears as you listen to my words, and I felt like it was holding me back. Anyway, I put all my suits in the old-timey suitcases I bought, and then I shower and shave and put on some cologne, and finally, I was ready to travel back to the 1940s to make sweet, sweet love to a soldier's wife. And, God willing, maybe more than one. So I put in the date and tudes, and the next thing I knew, I was back on the clean streets of 1944, Los Angeles. The first thing I wanted to do was buy the most expensive house in the most expensive neighborhood because I figured I was going to be here for a long time because I had nothing else to do with my life. So I buy a newspaper, because apparently they were important back then, and I search for expensive available houses and I find one, so I get a taxi and I head over to an open house. When I get to the house, I think, well, this isn't too shabby. It was a two-story house in a fancy neighborhood and everything seemed clean and safe, and so I went to the realtor and I tell her my name is Austin Powers because I have no reason to say my name is anything else. And she introduces herself and tells me her name, but it doesn't matter enough for me to mention it here because she's just some real estate agent in 1944. So I tell her I want to buy the house now, and she tells me there's a waiting period. But I ask her if there would be a waiting period if I paid double the asking price, and she promptly says no. Now I know what you're thinking, and the answer is yes. It did bother me that I might have overpaid to eliminate the waiting period. Like maybe she would have taken 10% more, or 50% more. But for some reason, I just said I'd double the price because I had so much money it didn't matter at all. But again, I felt bad that I may have overpaid like I had in ancient Egypt. But despite all of that, I was now a homeowner in 1944 Los Angeles. And now, I had to find out where all these lonely wives were hanging out. But then I stop and I consider whether I would only pursue the lonely wives in this era, or if I would try for the single ladies as well. I decide I shouldn't limit myself by only going after wives. I mean, the goal here is to meet a pretty girl I could fall in love with, not just to satisfy some filthy, filthy fetish of sleeping with another man's wife, a man who's overseas fighting for our freedom. So I search the newspaper for any sort of support group for women who miss their husbands. But then I see there's a grand opening of a club, so I figure, well, that's a good place to go and show everyone that I'm a rich, successful businessman with my own house that I overpaid for. So I get ready to go, but that's when I realize I don't have a car and that I'd have to take taxis, which wouldn't work with my rich businessman persona. My first thought was to get a Mercedes or Volkswagen, but then I decided probably isn't the best time to get a German-made car since we were at war with them. So I think, well, I guess I'll get a Ford. And so I go to the dealership and I buy the most expensive Ford on the lot, and now I'm wondering if this car really says I'm a successful businessman. To be fair, Ford did beat Ferrari in Ford versus Ferrari, so that's gotta say something. Or is it Ford v Ferrari? I don't know. Also, this was a time before the Japanese were making cars, so Ford probably didn't seem like the inferior choice. So now that I had my Ford and I had a house to go with it, it was time to go to this grand opening of the club and find myself a 1940s woman to love. So I head over to the grand opening, and when I get there, they have a spotlight and a bunch of dressed up people outside, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is nice. Sure, we were at war with Germany and Japan, but right now in Los Angeles, this was nice. So I pull my Ford up to the club and a valet comes up to me and offers to take my car, and I'm thinking, awesome, I don't even have to park my car in this era. So I walk into the club, but it's less of a club and more of a restaurant with a stage, like in The Mask. You remember that scene where Jim Carrey puts a mask on and then dances with Cameron Diaz? Man, that's a good movie. But the sequel, Son of the Mask, was awful. Just awful. But is it really a sequel if there aren't any of the same characters? Did you ever see it? Yeah, nobody did. But now I wonder if people will think about making an actual sequel now that we're living in a time where producers and studios only make sequels. I mean, I could go for a Mask Part 2, and that's when I decided that I wanted to go home and rewatch The Mask. In fact, I could go for a whole bunch of Jim Carrey movies. I mean, definitely not The Majestic. I never saw The Majestic, but just thinking about it makes me not want to see it. I saw the trailer and it's just like, come on, Jim Carrey. I don't want to see you acting all morose like you're Isaac Newton. But you know what? I like to watch his other movies, like The Number 23. I heard good things about that movie. Okay, so I gotta remember to watch The Mask and The Number 23. Anyway, I'm at the club slash restaurant and I tip the host so that I'll get a good seat. And he takes me over to a table, and now I'm looking around and like 75% of the people in the room are women. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is exactly the era for me to visit. But then I realize I need to think of a story as to why I'm not overseas fighting the war, because people would certainly ask. Sure, I could say I have bone spurs, but I decide against that because that's something only a pussy would say in order to get out of his military service. So instead, I decide to tell everyone I was wounded in battle and honorably discharged. Yes, that is what I'll tell people if they ever ask. The waitress appears and she asks what I'd like to eat, and I immediately tell her I got wounded overseas and that I got honorably discharged. And she tells me how brave I am and how her husband is still out there battling. And that's when I realize she's the love of my life and that I need to comfort her. So I tell her I'm new to the city and that I'm looking for some new friends because most of my friends were overseas battling against the Nazis. And she says that she would be my friend. And I tell her that would be very nice of her. And then I tell her I'm having a housewarming party for this new house I just bought for twice the selling price. And she says she'd love to go. And I tell her I don't know anyone in the area, so she should also invite all of her friends. And she says, of course she would. So now I had to figure out how to throw a Great Gatsby type of party in my new house. But I knew I wasn't capable of doing it on my own, which meant I had to find an event planner. So I look around the club and I start asking random people until I find someone who knows an event planner that could do it. So she gives me the woman's phone number. So I call up the event planner and she says she'd plan my event. And so I hire her and she gives me three different quotes. One quote was for a party that people would certainly enjoy. Another quote was for a great party that people would be talking about for years. And the third quote was for the best party of all time that nobody would ever forget. I took the third quote. So the event planner transforms my house into this magnificent venue, and I tell her to invite all the cool people because I want to look like I'm the greatest guy in the world and super sophisticated, and she says, no problem. And that's how I wound up throwing my Great Gatsby party. My party was about to start in an hour, so I put on my best suit, but something was missing. I needed something else, something that really added to my allure, something that got people talking about how I wasn't just some sort of successful businessman, but that I also had BDE. For those of you who don't know what BDE is, it's called Big Dick Energy, and it's something every man and woman wants to embody. Now, I'm not sure if you actually need to have a big dick in order to have big dick energy, but I'm guessing it doesn't hurt. The common thing for people who do have BDE is that they exude a certain confidence that other people don't have. And I knew just the right accessory that I could get that could help me improve my BDE, a cane. But it couldn't just be an ordinary cane. It had to be something special. A cane like in Jurassic Park. Something that said I was a super wealthy man who could afford very expensive canes and had a big dick. So I find a local cane store and I search through the canes until I find one that has a crown as the head. Is that what the top of a cane is called? And then the rest of it is beautiful mahogany and I'm thinking, yeah, someone with a big dick would definitely carry this around. So I check myself in the mirror and I gotta say, I look pretty awesome. But then I realize that to make the ensemble complete, I would need a cape. So I go to a local cape store and I get a nice black cape. But when I look in the mirror, I realize I kind of look like a vampire with a peg leg. So I take the cape off and I return the cane and decide I would just wear my nice suit. Because people with big dicks don't need accessories. So I drive back home in my Ford. But by this time, I'm late for my own party at my own house. And by the time I got to the party, it was already packed with a bunch of people I didn't know. And as I got in there, everyone thinks I'm a super important person since I was fashionably late to my own party. And that's when I spot the waitress wearing the sexy dress, and I knew in that moment that I would make her mine. And I want everyone to know that when I say that, I totally mean in a consensual manner. I was going to seduce her, not just overpower her and make her mine. I certainly wasn't going to biff Tannen in the situation. And when I say biff Tannen in here, I mean what he did in the car in Back to the Future 1 and 2. Not the money stealing part. I know it's confusing that I'm using the same character for two different verbs, but I think you're capable of distinguishing the two. I'm pro Biff Tannening when it comes to using time travel to make money, but I'm not for Biff Tannening when it comes to sexual assault. So I tell the waitress how excited I am that she's at my party and what a shame it is that her husband is still overseas fighting the Nazis, and she looks sad for a second, and that's when I note not to talk about her husband fighting overseas. But for good measure, I add, but I'm sure he's alive and okay, and not cheating on you with some women in Paris. And then, her eyes start to water and she walks away and I thought, well, does this mean I lost my chance with the waitress? And that's when I look around at the party and I spot another beautiful girl and I think, well, let's see if she's married to someone fighting in the war. So I go over to the beautiful woman and she introduces herself as Martha and my first thought is, well, that's an old lady name. And my second thought was, well, I guess it was a young lady name in the 1940s. So I glance at Martha's hand and I see she's ringless, and I'm not proud about this, but I told you I'm an honest person and it's best if I'm honest, so I feel I should tell you that my seeing she was single actually made me a little less attracted to her. It wasn't that I wanted to be with a married woman, I just didn't want to get a single woman's hopes up that she met the man of her dreams only for him to go back to the future and leave her all alone. Yeah, that's why I was less attracted. Anyway, I say goodbye to Martha and start searching for my waitress when I find her talking to another pretty woman and now I'm thinking, well, which one of these women am I more in love with? But then I thought, could I be in love with both of them at the same time? Was it possible for me to love two women at once? And of course, you know, express that love with them together at the same time? I wondered how taboo a three-way would be in the 1940s. At first I thought it would be impossible, but then I realized, this was the time of female liberation. These women were running the country like men, and by God, they could have sex like men too. In many ways, you could call me a feminist, Actually, I suppose you should call me a feminist. So I go up to the waitress and I start flirting with her in front of her friend to make her friend jealous. And I can tell her friend was jealous because she was looking at me like I should be giving her attention. And then, finally, she clears her throat and I look at her and I tell her my name is Austin Powers and that this was my fabulous party. And she smiles at me. And then I look over at the waitress and she's smiling at me too. And then I say, give me one second. So I leave the two and I head to the bathroom. But because I just bought the house, I didn't remember where the bathrooms were. So I just walk around aimlessly for a couple of minutes searching until I finally find one. When I get there, I look in the mirror and I splash my face with water and I tell myself I can't screw this up because who knows when I'd ever have this chance again. I didn't know how to go about all of this. I figured, in this moment in time, I had the possibility of making it happen. But the party was just beginning and so there was a lot of time for me to screw it up. And I knew that time wasn't my friend here. So I decided to make myself sparse until the night was coming to an end. And then I would continue my flirting. And I was fairly confident in myself that I could be charming for 10 minutes. But I wasn't confident I could be charming for several hours. So I leave the bathroom and now I have to go around the room and be super charming to everyone so that the waitress and her friend could see how liked I was. I figured it was sort of like foreplay. But the problem was that I didn't know anyone. So I'd have to turn up my charm to its max. So I make my way around the party when I spot a guy nearby with a handlebar mustache and my first thought was, who let a guy into my party? And my second thought was, are handlebar mustaches in right now? So of course, I go up to the guy and I touch the mustache because when you see a handlebar mustache, you have to touch it. I mean, it's a law of nature. Luckily, the guy didn't try to slap me with a dueling glove. Instead, he laughs and then I say I love his mustache and he says, thanks. And then I say, see you later. And then I walk over to the next guest. Look, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you how I charmed every single person at this party, okay? Just know that I did a really good job and I constantly saw the waitress and her friend out of the corner of my eye checking in on me from afar. And they were totally impressed by how charming and dignified I appeared. It was getting late and people started trickling out of the party, but the waitress and her friend remained. And at this point of time, I'm getting super excited as I realize that this is what all my time traveling had been coming down to. This moment of having a threesome with two women from the 1940s. And I wasn't going to fail. Or was I? No, I wasn't. So finally, I make my way back to the waitress and her friend and suddenly, we're the last three people at the party and I ask them if they enjoyed the night. And they say it's the best party they've ever been to and I say, that's great. How about we have a nightcap? And they're all into it. And so I go and I get some wine. And as I bring them each a glass, I wonder how to actually move all of this from conversation to kissing. Like, which of them do I kiss first? Or do I try to get them to kiss each other? Or do I kiss them at the same time? As I bring the women their glasses, they start to talk about their husbands overseas and how they fear for their lives every day. And that's when I start to feel something inside of me that I hadn't felt in a very long time. Maybe it was empathy. Is empathy when you really want to bone two women at the same time? If so, then I was feeling empathy. So I say, why don't we take this conversation to the bedroom? And that's when the waitress shakes her head and I'm thinking, how dare she reject me after coming to my awesome party and staying until the end? But then she says, why don't we just hang out here? And she slips off her dress and I see her in her underwear and she's wearing a super pointy bra. You know the kind that women used to wear to make their boobs look like pyramids? I would know because I saw the pyramids firsthand. And then her friend slips off her dress and that's when the tears start to seep out of my eyes as if Jefferson Davis just called me some really mean name. Except this time, instead of sad tears, they were tears of happiness and I just couldn't believe that something was finally about to go right for me. And I wasn't gonna screw it up by taking a picture or anything. I had learned my lesson from my journeys through time, and I couldn't risk not partaking in this lovemaking session. Now look, you should know that I'm not one to kiss and tell. I mean, you've listened to this book and you know how careful I am about giving away details. And just like those other times, I'm not going to tell you anything more than, yes, it did happen, and yes, it was one of the best moments of my life. And no, I don't think it's sad that one of the best moments of my life is the sexual experience I had with two women in the 1940s who are most likely dead in the present time or pushing 90 if they happen to still be alive. All I know is that their boobs were in fact not triangular shape. And that's all I'm gonna tell you. Fine, I'll also tell you that I collectively gave both women 2 orgasms. You can figure out on your own how it's divvied up between them, but just know that 2 orgasms for a single sexual encounter is pretty good. Even if one of the women didn't climax, I mean, I'm not saying that's what happened, but if it did, it would totally be understandable if one of the women had to remove herself in the middle of the lovemaking session because she was too ashamed of what she was doing. But even if that did happen, which I'm not saying it did, it still would theoretically count as a threesome because there were 3 of us at one point of time all making love. So, there. In the morning, the women were hungry and wanted breakfast, and that's when I realized I have no food in the house because I hadn't stocked a fridge. So they want me to take them out, but I didn't want to go with them. It was at that moment that I realized that what I want most isn't some sort of steamy threesome in 1944, but is to be able to share my stories. Because isn't that what life is really about? Sharing our memories with others? And that's when I decided I would finally meet back up with my time-traveling buddy on the Titanic. I mean, sure, I didn't fulfill my promise of fixing everything on his list. But you know what? I did a few of them, and isn't that what really counts? Just doing a few things somebody asks of you? I mean, how many of you would have done all the things on the list? Like, one thing he wanted me to do was go back to the 18th century during the signing of the Constitution and make sure women had the right to vote and weren't treated as property. But, like, I had been to America so many times and, like, women eventually got the right to vote in the 1920s and I just didn't really want to see Ben Franklin again at that time. But no harm, no foul, you know? Anyway, I decided I would go back in time to the Titanic. And that is where this book ends. But I bet you can't guess what's going to happen. But don't even try to guess, because I'm about to tell you in the next chapter. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe and rate the podcast to help me get more of the positive attention I so sorely need. Follow the show on Instagram at Time Traveler's Guide Podcast and me at Anonymous Time Traveler 69. New episodes out Thursday nights at 8.